The Amalekites were nomads who kind of controlled that region, the northwestern region of the Sinai wilderness. And this event that we heard in that first reading happens only a few weeks after they had crossed the Red Sea from Egypt and were on their way to Israel. And so you're talking about a band of former slaves. They weren't military. They probably had very few weapons. They weren't trained. And then they get attacked by these Amalekites. And so the only hope they have is prayer. And so Moses says, I'm going to go up on the mountain and I'm going to pray. And he says to Joshua, and this is the first we hear about Joshua, who becomes Moses' successor, and he's the one who actually leads them across the Jordan into the land of Israel 40 years later. So Joshua, he commands the what army they have, and Moses prays. And so Moses, he has this staff in his hand. And this is the same staff with which he touched the Nile River in Egypt and it turned to blood. This is the same staff that he turned into a snake in Pharaoh's presence. This is the same staff with which he touched the Red Sea and it parted so they could cross on dry land. This staff is with Moses all the time. And then after Moses dies, he gives that staff to Joshua, and Joshua uses that same staff to touch the Jordan River, and it stops flowing, dams up, and they cross on dry land into Israel. So you can picture Moses with his arms outstretched, and you can't hold your arms out for hours. They weary. And so he has help from these two men who hold up his arms. What does that look like? It looks like Jesus strung up on the cross. Moses is a type for Christ, and the gospel writers love to refer to Christ as the new Moses. Moses led them through the Red Sea baptism. We would look back and call that baptism. And he leads them into the promised land. And Jesus is baptized in the Jordan, and he prays all night long in the Garden of Gethsemane. And it's been said that prayer, especially long prayer, persistent prayer, suffering prayer, is really about conforming our wills to God's will for us. And we often pray wrongly, don't we? We often pray for things that we really don't need. And sometimes when God gives us what we do need, it comes as a surprise. It wasn't what we were expecting. But Jesus, he's always conforming his will to the Father's will, so much so that his will and the Father's will become one. There's no separation. And so in the agony in the garden, Jesus prays, Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me, but not my will, but yours be done. There's the resolution to his prayer, the absolute joining of his will and the Father's will. Well, it's the same for us. And so God doesn't get changed because of our prayer. It's not as if God changed his mind and decides to love us. God has always loved us. It's not as if God changes his mind because we're persistent and says, okay, I guess I'll give them what they need. God always wants to give us what we need. But we often pray wrongly. And St. Paul says, we don't know how to pray as we ought, but the Spirit translates for us. The Spirit puts the right words in the Father's ear, even though we don't know what those words are. But prayer transforms us. It doesn't transform God, but it transforms us. And so every Sunday, we gather around this altar of sacrifice in front of a scene of the crucifixion. And we think of Christ with his arms outstretched in the prayer of his death and resurrection. You know, his death and resurrection, the union of his will and the Father's will, gets physically exhibited on the cross. And we join our prayers to his. We lay our prayers on the altar along with Christ. And this is the great Eucharistic prayer, the prayer of praise and thanksgiving at the heart of every Mass, is that opportunity for us to join our wills to God's will, to offer our lives and say, we don't know what this is going to look like, but we trust you. We trust that you are going to give us what we need. Maybe not what we want, but what we need. And then Jesus encourages us to be persistent about that. And he tells that little story about the unjust judge. And in Jesus' day, and it's probably true in every generation, in every country, just the way things are, this side of the kingdom, the result of original sin, it's the way things are that there are government officials who are on the take. There are judges who aren't just. There are officials and leaders who care neither for God nor human beings. It just happens. And this widow, she's the poorest of the poor. In that culture, in those days, the only advocate a woman had was her husband. And he was dead. So she has no advocate. And yet, she trusts that eventually she's going to wear this guy down. And God says, if this powerless widow can wear down an unjust judge, how much more is God going to desire to give you everything you need, and he'll do it speedily. So be persistent and be patient, but don't give up your prayer. And if you need help, seek it out. Moses had the humility to say, can you guys hold my arms? You know, he couldn't do it by himself, and neither can we. We need the church. We need the community. It's so important for us to be gathered here together. Yes, we all have our own private prayers, and that's important too. But once a week at least, we need to gather with one another and lean on each other and support each other with our prayers. This is the body of Christ. This is the church. This is how it looks. And this is why we're here.